Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to and about the Bioneers and the Bioneers Conference, and we will, of course, be talking to Robert Knott because it's Friday, speaking of the arts. Right now, I would like to welcome Cyril Christo and Marie Wilkinson. They are photographers, and they are co-authors of the new book, Walking Thunder, In the Footsteps of the African Elephant, and they will be speaking tonight, Friday, October 16th, at Collected Works Bookstore here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you. So this is a stunning, huge, beautiful book with a lot of photographs of elephants and also some text in it, mostly these photographs of elephants. How did the two of you become involved with the whole question of African elephants and photographing them?
Well, we began by looking at climate change in 96, 97, and did a big trip in 97, 98, which Cheryl likes to note that was the hottest year in recorded history.
We went around the world from our interest in the Southwest with the Hopi, who had predicted a lot of what is actually happening. Remember, the famous Hopi prophecies are very important. We looked at resources from coal to uranium, went around the world from Australia to interest in Central Asia to Namibia, in terms of how we were looking at the world from the indigenous point of view. And it coincided with a lot of the forest fires and the burning of the forests in Indonesia in 97, 98.
As well as Australia. There were a series of fires then there as well.
Yeah, and everybody was telling us how the rains had changed, and we were looking at patterns in terms of what the cycles were telling us in terms of the geography, the plants, the rain cycles, the monsoons, and we know that everything has been altered over the last 20 years. Most people agree that it started in the early 80s, and we concentrated our work in Africa because it turned out to be the most interesting place of all because it's where the human race began.
So you were looking at climate change, and you were looking at indigenous ways of thinking and indigenous stories, and you were photographing.
Yes.
Did you, at that point, when you really decided to focus on Africa, was the elephant the focus right away, or what did you do? How did it go?
Africa was special because it's where we began, and the elephant also began. And it's very, we were looking at people and what they had to tell us about the cycles, always going to the elders, listening to what had changed, when the seeds had come out, when the wildebeest migration began, and listening to when the beetles came out, so that you have a parallel kind of template for what was going on the ground. But the people in Africa have always had an extraordinary relationship to the non-human, as we've had all over the world. But the place of origin is probably the best place to understand where we're going as a species. Now they discovered the oldest fossil in Ethiopia 4.4 million years ago. The elephants still have a relationship to the Maasai and the Samburu, especially in those who've made the elephant a totem for hundreds of years. And stories from the Bushmen, the oldest people on the planet, who maybe go back 40,000 or more years. And they have stories and petroglyphs and rock art sites, over 70,000 rock art sites all over Africa that relate to the other beings, and of course the elephant is prime.
There's an interesting quotation in the beginning of your book which says something like, the white man has always seen the elephant as ivory, the black man has always seen the elephant as meat, and in order to see the elephant as a noble and dignified creature, you have to have 3 square meals and food in your stomach and so on.
Right.
I wonder how that matches up with your exploration of the stories and the attitudes toward the elephant that you saw in Africa.
That's a very good question. That's a citation from Romain Gary, who was very concerned about the destruction in Chad of the elephant herds about 50 years ago. It was made into a film with Errol Flynn and Trevor Howard and Orson Welles, but the book is a masterpiece. The consciousness of the elephant has always been part of the Western mind from Egyptian times, the Greeks, the Romans. And unfortunately, we haven't quite revered the elephant as we should have. We've destroyed them over time. And even from the 3rd century in Egypt, when they started taking ivory, to the loss of most of the herds in Roman times in North Africa by the 2nd, 3rd, 4th century. Everything was gone, from Morocco to Syria. And then the Europeans rediscovered the world, and especially the Portuguese in the 16th century, and then 17th, 18th, 19th century, they started to take out the tribes and the wildlife. But unlike those who were already looking for ivory, we looked at it looking for ivory in terms of surviving from the elephant's meat and then using the ivory for exchange, using the metal from the Swahili coast on East Africa, being able to take the metals, to be able to hunt and use materials that they didn't have, like the Wakamba, the Waliangulu in Kenya. The Europeans were devastating entire herds for billiard balls, for piano keys, on which Mozart played.
Right.
All the way to the 20th century, and now it's starting again in Asia. But while there were 5 million elephants in 1900, now there are only 400,000. If this continues with the chopsticks and the toothpicks and the statues, we will lose the elephant within 15 years.
And the stamps.
The stamps, what do you mean?
The Japanese stamp, which is a status symbol, is carved from the ivory, and it is used to stamp your letters or stamp your...
Uh-huh.
They're called hankos.
Hankos, right. Yeah. Correct.
And what we would use rubber stamps, that's an ivory stamp, but the same idea, you dip it in ink, okay.
Right.
A lot of it is driven by vanity, yeah. Pure greed and vanity, yeah. And the marketplace.
But the trade started a long time ago with not just the Europeans, but with the Asians. And the big trade of ivory came along with the slave trade, and as the slaves were marched to the coast, they were often required to carry a tusk with them to the coast, and the coast was part of the Sultanate of Oman's territory. And then it was shipped on to India, actually, because the African ivory was considered superior to the Asian ivory. I'm not exactly sure why, but that
no, they're also bigger. They're much bigger.
But the consistency was considered superior.
Yeah.
So India has traditionally been the main recipient for at least 600 years of the African ivory.
At the same time, there are some of these stories which you cite in this incredible book, Walking Thunder, of Maasai stories and other legends which very much respect the elephant.
Yeah, even if there was conflict, or when young Maasai warriors took out a young elephant to prove themselves, not as much as they would against a lion, and there's a lot of stuff we still have to uncover about that, but it wasn't done in droves, and it wasn't done like shooting the buffalo here. So when the buffalo was exterminated in the West from railroads, just shooting as if they were at a carnival or a circus, they went on to Africa. So it was just about pure decimation. There was no rite of initiation. The native people, if they took out something, they had their lives on the line.
They took as much as they needed or as much as they could carry or consume. There wasn't a possibility for taking
more than
vast amounts. Yeah. I mean, it's actually a similar issue with the seals in the Arctic.
Now, what is it like? I mean, you photographed these elephants and the pictures are incredible. What was it like in terms of all your senses, seeing them, hearing them, being among them? How did you say, okay, I'm a photographer, I want to go photograph elephants. What do you do and what is it like?
They are awe-inspiring. Whether you're looking at the vast landscape and a single elephant and just the majestic size, or whether you're looking at the vast landscape and a huge herd parading by, coming close to you, parading away, or whether you're moving in and looking at the eye or the skin or the way the thigh moves, the leg moves. There is a knowing in that eye that a number of people who have seen whales feel about the whale. And as you watch a group of elephants moving. So, sorry, first I was talking about photographically what's really inspiring, but more than that, as you watch the solitary elephant grazing, paying attention to you, not paying attention to you, seemingly aloof or curious, or whether you're watching a small group of males interacting and boasting and posturing, or whether you're watching a family group, there is a a social dynamic which is absolutely fascinating.
Is it familiar to you as a human being?
Yes. I would say, I think, it. You know, it's not literally the same, but there is a familiarity.
The must I say, it's the model for family coherence. They have a term called tenebo, and that's the model for how we should conduct ourselves. The elder mothers taking care of the babies, the young boys taking care of themselves, the bulls on the outside doing what they have to do, and the family, the bachelor herd looking over the family herd in the distance. There's a dynamic that's only common with the primates and the whales. It's really quite a remarkable thing.
And to expand on the tenebo, there is their atlas bone, or the bone behind in the cervical. What
in
is it?
The elephant's neck.
Yeah.
In the elephant's neck. I think it's the lowest cervical vertebrae is huge, and it's used, it's the atlas bone. It's what holds up the atlas uses on his back to hold up the earth. So it is considered the strongest bone. And amongst the Samburu and the Kikuyu, it is used as a symbol of truth, but truth and the power of greater than God, or as powerful as God. So if there is, for example, a dispute between two people, someone accusing somebody of stealing, and they can't resolve it, and they can't resolve it amongst themselves, they can't resolve it with the family, they can't resolve it with the elders, they then need to swear on the atlas bone that they are telling the truth. And they determine from that swearing whoever is lying, because what will happen if you lie is you swear on that atlas bone, members of your family will start to die. If you are telling a lie, bad things will befall you and your family, and people will die. And so it is taken very, very seriously.
A lesson for our politicians these days.
And they're rare. I mean, at times they've actually carved a model out of stone, because part of the key to it in the structure is that it, unlike any other bone, it has, I think it has five holes.
I'm not sure, yeah.
It has a certain number of holes that make it very unique, and so there's this notion that the truth can pass.
And in Dante's time, this is why we have to hold on to the elephant, because it's part of our very being, whether we like it or not. Mind and matrix and metaphor are all interwoven, and the body itself. But to leave purgatory in Dante's book, you had to pass through the house of sleep. The gate of horn supposedly related to the truth, while the gate of polished ivory related to lies, and that was that which was illusion, and not relating to proper moral conduct. So there's a lot of symbolic reference. That's in the Middle Ages. A lot of the statuettes from the Virgin and the baby were made out of ivory. So there's a lot of symbolic reference throughout human history.
There is, in your book, I can't remember who said, but elephants and human beings, our fates mirror each other. If the elephant goes, we go. Is that a symbolic way of thinking, or is there an ecological basis to that, or how do you see that, Cyril?
How do I see that? The one Maasai gentleman said, once the wildlife is gone, well, Isaac Dennison said, once the wildlife is gone, all that will remain will be able to find the biggest thrills in the middle of our biggest cities, which is exactly what's happening. It's the meth and it's the mindless entertainment. It's the gadgets, it's the military. We're looking for external entertainment, and then we'll only be able to self-cannibalize. The Maasai say that if we lose the elephant, we will lose our minds. Not just because of the symbolic, the totemic relationship, the things that have entered in dreams and rituals, they helped us move out of Africa, but it is indispensable to the ecologies of the rainforest, the savannas, not only just the remains of the elephant at the end of the day. Like the gorillas, we know they help fertilize the rainforest. But there are all these dimensions and patterns of intelligence and lattices and matrices that we are only just discovering in the last generation.
It's really a race against time in some way. I mean, it's very hard to do wildlife conservation of all kinds anywhere, including in Africa.
True, and I think that's one of the wonderful connections between the Southwest, specifically New Mexico where we live, and Africa, where we're confronted with vast areas of open land, cattle grazing, and wildlife. And how do we balance this mixture? As we were looking at the people for Lost Africa, which was our first book, Lost Africa, The Eyes of Origin, where we were looking at the place hunter-gatherers and place-based people, we came to respect how they lived in and of the land without the notion of dominion over the land. Now, granted, there were many tragedies that happened. It's not easy. It's quite difficult. But the importance of the interface and understanding between the people and the wildlife and the landscape is vital to the future of this planet. And there's a lot of work being done here and a lot of work being done there, and actually quite a lot of exchange. I mean, we have a long way to go, but understanding how to have conservation work in such a way that it allows people to live sustainably, and to allow the animals to live in such a way that they can actually evolve rather than be stuck in a modified zoo, if you will.
Right. Most of us probably will not go to Africa and see elephants. We can see your book, which is incredible, but what can people do to see to it that elephants and other wildlife, but elephants specifically in this case, survive?
What can we do? Be very mindful that the elephant is indispensable, like the 19th century poets like Novalis and others said, that one cannot know oneself without knowing the other. Support the Conservation Trust, the Daphne Sheldrick, the Wildlife International, the World Wildlife Fund, but also let people know that globalization and the marketplace are genociding and holocausting, if that's a verb, the elephant just as much as other populations of people throughout the 20th century. They are now being holocausted at the rate of 30,000 a year. And it's all coming through Asia. So if there's a way to know that we can buy toys for kids that are made in China, we can buy all these goods that are part of the global marketplace, but if we don't blow the whistle, as it's being done a little bit, a group of senators was just addressed by a conservation biologist, Sam Wasser from University of Seattle, to say that the ivory trade has got to be stopped. They say, the UN says, well, we can't go into this country and stop the ivory trade or whatever. We can't say no. But if we lose this being and say, well, it's their problem, Zaire or the Congo, Cameroon, where they just had a shipment of 1,000 kilograms just being shipped. They go through Nairobi in sarcophagi, coffins full of ivory. That's a metaphor. But if we don't blow the whistle and say, internationally, this is as important as climate change. It is part of the climate change, but we are also not acting as we should to protect a part of our own mind and sanity and the biosphere at large. We have to make a stand. Now, in 1989, a stand was made and the trade was stopped. Within a year, people protested all over the world and it was stopped.
But and that was the year of Richard Leakey's famous
ivory burn.
Yeah. In Kenya. But I'd also like, there are two organizations that are working from two different angles to help the elephants. One is the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, which works, many of you know, work with orphaned elephants to hand raise them and then release them again into a protected area in Tsavo National Park. They also work with rhinos. Their work includes protection against poaching, safeguarding the natural environment, enhancing community awareness, and addressing problems in animal welfare, and providing veterinary assistance to animals in need. So it's not just at the world-famous orphanage in Nairobi. If anybody's interested, their website is sheldrickwildlifetrust.org.
How do you spell Sheldrick?
Sheldrick is spelled S-H-E-L-D-R-I-C-K. They are receiving a portion of the proceeds from the sale of each of our books. The other organization is Tusk Trust, and they are working to both protect wildlife, particularly endangered species, but they also are helping to alleviate poverty through sustainable development and education among rural communities that live alongside the wildlife, helping people to view wildlife as an asset rather than a liability. And their goal is to reduce the human-wildlife conflict and improve the livelihoods in these rural communities through protection of wildlife and sustainable use of the resources.
And they're at tusk.org.
They are at tusk.org. Exactly.
Cyril Christo and Marie Wilkinson are photographers and co-authors of the book Walking Thunder in the Footsteps of the African Elephant. And once again, they'll be at Collected Works Bookstore this evening on Galisteo Street in Santa Fe at 6 o'clock. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back with the Bioneers in just a moment. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Spencer Wines. He is with the Bioneers, and this weekend is the Bioneers Conference. Welcome, Spencer.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. Yeah, we are out in Marin County, California, where we're having our 20th big annual conference. Just wanted to say hello and let people know that we're going to be beaming in on the satellite back into our hometown of Santa Fe.
Now, this seems to be the big 21st century thing, is beaming things all over the place. We have the opera beamed from the Met to the Lenzic. We had the Laramie Project the other night. Bioneers is being beamed, so people can actually go to the Center for Contemporary Arts in Santa Fe and attend the Bioneers Conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be showing live at 10 a.m. Today, tomorrow, and Sunday. And then they're going to repeat it at 3 to 7 in the evening. So they're going to show all five of our big keynote speeches each day, as well as art performances. And it should be pretty amazing.
The Bioneers has been around for 20 years, and they have done some incredible, what would you call it, pioneering of technologies and ways of living and ways of doing things that in this time, some of which have made it into kind of mainstream American and world culture. Give us some examples of that.
Well, yeah, it's very much part of our mission to find new ideas, especially new ideas that are breakthrough ideas coming from nature, and to promote them. When we started having our first conference, we would talk about this concept of learning how to engineer things from nature. We didn't even have a word for it. And finally, Janine Binias in 1997 was giving one of our talks, and she talked about biomimicry. And now biomimicry has become an entire field of design for industrial design, where designers will go and they will look at nature and they will copy it, and they'll find out how best to do so, maybe taking everything from the fur of an animal to the design of a leaf, and they can use it to design new products that are a lot more environmentally friendly. And every year there's some new idea that seems to pop up like this that germinates at the conference, that gets talked about. Eventually this kind of grows and catches on in the public consciousness, and it's a big part of what we get to do. You know, we have a lot of well-known speakers like Michael Pollan and Andrew Weil who are speaking this year, but we also try and find the people who aren't well-known but who should be because of the research they're doing, the work they're doing, and get that out to the public.
My favorite one to this day continues to be the mushroom that eats oil spills. Is that being used?
Yeah, Paul Stamets. He's invented the strain of mushrooms that, will literally eat oil after an oil spill. And he has a company, and they go around and they contract to do this all over the world. It's about cleaning up brownfields and that kind of thing, and using nature to do so. Again, the one thing that the message you get from the conference every year is that all these solutions to the environmental problems we have are already there, and it's a question of getting the will to implement them and the knowledge to implement them, and that's a big part of kind of what we do. It's turned into a big conference, and it's great to see that you get activists on one side who are coming together, and then you get scientists on the other side, and they interact, and next thing you know, these ideas are going from the lab to the real world.
It's a huge concept to take in that all the solutions we need are already here. That means that the barriers are either lack of knowledge or political dramas of one kind or another.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because, we have this project that we started last year. We're based in New Mexico, and we love New Mexico. So we wanted to do something about our own state as kind of an example. And what we did was we went and we did an in-depth study of all the available renewable energy in New Mexico. And we worked with Google Earth, and we created a map of the entire state of New Mexico showing if the year were 2020 and we did everything right, where we could be getting all of our energy from without using fossil fuels. And it's completely doable. I mean, we have all those resources, especially in New Mexico, probably more than any state in the union with the solar and wind that is available. We have all those resources available. It's going to take a political will, and it's going to take the free market working properly and not being impeded by lobbying. And if we can just do those things, we could be completely off of fossil fuels in 10 years in New Mexico. The same is true with local food. We're right now doing a local food chef map of New Mexico that shows how much of our food we can get locally. All these are, you know, ideas that are completely doable, that can be accomplished. And we just haven't, you know, gotten there. We have to build the structure, and we have to build the will in the community to do that. And that's a large part of what the conference is about.
And another big concept is letting the free market go about its business without impediment. It actually could end up being a big boon for green industry and green energy.
Oh, well, it's always a big issue this at the conference, because we have every year we'll have speakers who will come and talk about these new ideas, and often what's standing in their way is the big interests. They're going up against Michael Pollan, for example. This year is going to be talking about how you can't reform healthcare without reforming the industrial food system, and here's a guy who has been coming under a big attack from the industrial food producers. Now, they could change their model and make a fortune in producing food that is healthier for Americans. They simply are, like what happens with a lot of large institutions. You get used to doing things a certain way, and you don't want to think about new ideas. And the big part of this conference is bringing people to come together and think about these new ideas and to promulgate them. And then they catch on, and then it seems obvious. 10 years down the road, a lot of the things we were talking about 10 years ago, they seem obvious. At the first Bioneers Conference, one of the big issues was James Hansen, the NASA scientist, who just talked about the threat of global climate change. And this was a very new idea. And for 20 years now, we've been talking about it, and it's gotten to the point where we can't simply talk anymore. We have to start taking action. We're getting together with the State of the World Forum in February in Washington, D.C. We're joining together with them to form, with several other environmental organizations, a group called the Climate Leadership Campaign. And we're going to go around and convince and talk to different states and corporations, large entities like that, to convince them that they themselves can get off fossil fuels and that they can reduce their carbon emissions by 80% by 2020, which is much more than people are even talking about in the Copenhagen talks that are coming up, but which is what is really necessary. And so this is going to come from the ground up. These solutions always seem to do, and that's something we've seen at the conference every year.
And so taking part in it, even if you just go to watch and watch the lectures and so on beamed through to the Center for Contemporary Arts, it can really change your life in some way and change your mind and help you, the listener, the viewer, the participant, to be part of the solution in some way.
It's a big deal to be able to come together with other people and to feel something that's actually hopeful and inspiring. It's really easy to get down about the state of the environment because we are in a crisis, there's no question. And the more you learn, the more depressing it gets sometimes. But the great thing about the conference is you come and your batteries get completely charged because you see that there are people who are entirely committed to solving these issues and that there are these answers out there. People come away constantly and they say, it really changed my life and it gave me the impetus to really recommit myself. So a large part of what we do here is about recharging the batteries with new knowledge and information that gets everybody all pumped up.
Spencer Wines is with Bioneers. For more information, you can go to bioneers.org. You can also call the Center for Contemporary Arts in Santa Fe at 982-1338. Spencer, thanks so much for being here, and we'll see you when you're back in Santa Fe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
We're going to take a very little break right now, and Robert Knott will be with us in just a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Calendar in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. He is the education reporter, and he's with us here just about every Friday speaking of the arts. Welcome, Robert.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. The Turquoise Trail Charter School sent me a flyer yesterday, student exhibition of the Self-Portrait Project, which I assume is self-portraits, roughly 20 students involved, and that's been running and will continue to run through the end of October at the Lucky Bean Cafe in Rancho Viejo. It's not too far away, 55 Canada del Rancho. There's actually a reception is tonight, 5 to 7, even though the show opened in late September. So head on down there to support some of those young people that are making interesting art. You want a phone number? Here it is, 438-8999.
There's quite a bit of salsa and Latin music going on this weekend.
Tell us all about it.
Well, the Changui Son is playing tonight at Tiny's, starting at 8:30 here in Santa Fe. That's Cerrillos and St. Francis in that little shopping center there. And a bunch of people from Carlos Mora's dance class are going to go down there. And also the Mambo Room is happening tomorrow at the Lodge, and that's a great event. There's a website called santarueda.com that lists all sorts of other things. It's a busy week in Santa Fe for salsa.
Pretty good. Also, music-wise, Jerry Carthy told me this week that he started up a, boy, I don't have the total info. Sunday nights at Celebrations on St. Michael's Drive. They moved over to St. Mike's. I like their breakfasts, by the way. They have like an Irish improv music. I'm not sure how to exactly state it since I didn't bring his email with me. My mistake, not his. But I know that it's sort of this open Irish music, lively, exciting. There was a small cover charge to hear them. I think it's 6 o'clock on Sundays. I apologize if I'm getting that wrong. My guess is if you call Celebrations, they'll be happy to tell you the details. Our cover story today is Mark Spencer, artist who I think sometimes hangs out here at the Santa Fe Beacon.
Yes, indeed. Very talented artist.
Yeah, and there's a great story on him in today's Pasa Tiempo, courtesy of Doug Fairfield. Really beautiful, striking, slightly disconcerting images. But it's a really good story with him. And I met Doug sometime where in the article I asked him how to explain his art. And he said, Mark says something like, I'm my own ism. I love the isms.
Mark-ism.
Mark Spencer-ism. The show's called Drawn and Tempered. The reception is 5:30 tonight at Scotia Gallery, 150 West Marcy Street, Suite 103. Here's a phone number. 820-7787. See the story in today's Pasa Tiempo. The exhibit runs through October 30th, which, of course, is the day before Halloween.
I can't wait
till we do our Halloween special and you dress up as a skeleton.
Oh, okay. One of our Santa Fe institutions whose performances are worth mentioning from time to time, David Geist and the Geist Cabaret at Pranzo Italian Grill tonight. And then tomorrow, he's solo tonight on piano and vocals, and then tomorrow he's playing with Phyllis Love. And then Sunday, once again, solo. All the shows are 6 to 9 in the evening. And the food up there, of course, is very tasty.
Faith Page is playing, vocalist, pianist, 4 o'clock Sunday at Vanessi. Cover charge, 982-9966. She's been in town 6 or 7 months. I hope to catch one of her shows.
We had her on the air just the other day.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I may have recommended you to her, but I'm not sure. I recommend a lot of people to you.
Is that right?
I recommend you to a lot of people.
Well, there we go.
And I try not to recommend you to the people I think you like if they're from a different level of society.
What?
You know, if they look like the hoi polloi.
Dude, we have people from every level of society on this show.
Well,
that's what it's all about.
Well, I try to protect you, though. I mean, some people have... I mean, there's people that are interested in dating you, and I keep them away from you.
I'm
like a big brother for you.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
Big brother.
That one guy was pretty good looking, even though I don't go for guys. You might have liked him.
Quite Cyril Christo and Marie Wilkinson, whom we just had on this morning, Walking
Fabulous
Thunder, in the footsteps of the African elephant today at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'll show you this book. It is black and white photography, or it's more like sepia toned in the effect it has. Beautiful photography of elephants. It's just to die for, and it really makes you want to make sure that these elephants' lives are saved, because they're pretty much an endangered species by this time.
And something tells me that we're having a story on that next week in Pasa, and I may be wrong about that.
Oh, I hope so.
I just came back from vacation, so I've been a little off my game.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Walking Thunder is the name of the book. Cyril Christo and his wife Marie Wilkinson, very good artists, and there's good text in the book as well.
Excellent. The Lion in Winter opens at the Santa Fe Playhouse.
That's some play.
That's some play.
It is an amazing play. I guess it was a great movie. I never saw the movie.
The initial production was not particularly popular. Jonathan Richards wrote a really nice sort of historical story about this play by James Goldman. And I remember TheaterWorks doing a pretty good production of it back in 2001. So Suzanne's tackling it over at the Santa Fe Playhouse, putting it in contemporary dress, given the dialogue's contemporary. I sort of understand that.
Suzanne Lederer, yeah.
It's a bit of a risk, but it could pay off. And that's opening tonight with a gala. Reception at 7. The show's at 8. You got to pay more to go to the gala. We don't name prices on KSFR. We can tell you that Pay What You Wish Thursdays exist. So head on over there if you're on a tight budget on a Thursday night. 8 o'clock shows in the evening, 2 p.m. on Sunday matinees. The Playhouse is on DeVargas Street. Here's the phone number, 988-4262. And please see Jonathan Richards' story in today's Pasta Tempo. Also,
it's a block away from Upper Crust Pizza.
You got it, right down the street. Karen Zacharias, a really fascinating playwright. I interviewed her for Pasta Tempo today. Her new piece, Legacy of Light, opens at Theater Work tonight, which is now currently working out of the James A. Little Theater, New Mexico School for the Deaf, 1060 Sabios Road, 471-1799. 7:30 shows, 2 p.m. matinees on Sunday, runs for 2 weeks. So you got a new work opening over there. This is only the second production of the play in the country. And then you have Lion in Winter at the Playhouse.
Yeah, lots of good theater. I saw the dress rehearsal for Lion in Winter, and it's, I mean, very good actors. And it's a really stunning play. I mean, the script is fabulous, and you watch it, and it makes you think about all the vicissitudes of power and politics and family,
and family
all combined
yeah.
into one.
It's a wonderful play.
So here's another thing that's happening. Tomorrow at noon at the Roundhouse, some folks who are in favor of marriage equality are creating the world's largest engagement ring. They're making a human, a gigantic human ring. Everybody holds hands at the Roundhouse. And somebody has provided gold lamé and a big, huge diamond. They're going to try to get into the Guinness Book of World Records.
Oh, boy.
So you can be part of that. You can be part of the world's largest engagement ring by showing up probably before noon would be good. And they will be the ring for probably 15 or 20 minutes. And that's it. It's equality New Mexico.
Nice. Ring around the rosy, I guess. Hey, Thursday night, Anything Goes opens, Santa Fe Repertory's inaugural show. This is a new company that's promising to present new and old works.
Christy Carson. We're
going
to have her on the air next week, too.
Right. I was going to say you already interviewed her, but...
No, we're about to next
so.
Week.
And, she'll be... they're kicking off at 7:30 Thursday, running just one weekend through Sunday with two shows on Saturday and Sunday. It's at Warehouse 21, although it's not a Warehouse 21 production. And you can call 629-6517 for info. I think Craig Smith will have something about this in next Friday's Pasta Tempo.
And one thing that was true of The Lion in Winter, which I think is also true of Anything Goes, is that even if you go to a lot of theater in Santa Fe, you may see some actors you've never seen before. Christy Carson has found a bunch of people who are very gifted and who are doing this production. Of course, if you do musical theater like that, there's singing and dancing and acting, and putting that all together is tricky business.
That's a great contemporary musical show, pre-Rodgers and Hammerstein, let's make the music fit the story. It's just really about the music and with a goofy plot line. It's typical 1930s screwball, but it's a really fun show with some great tunes, you know, including the title tune, Anything Goes, and...
Well, it's Cole Porter, isn't it?
It's Cole Porter, that's right. Yeah. So
what's not to like?
What's not to like?
I'll tell you what else is not to like.
What?
I mean, what else is what's not?
No, we want to hear
what else
don't
is to like is Saturday from 7 to 10 in the evening. KSFR and the Santa Fe Art Institute are teaming up for Jazz in the Lounge with John Trent Acosta, Straight Up, and special guest Brian Wingard. Light refreshments, yum. And then the following week, on Thursday, October 22nd from 5:30 to 7:30, it's the November Artists and Writers in Residence. That's a free event at Santa Fe Art Institute.
Is that the studio tour?
It's an open studio.
Right, you come visit and see what they're doing.
Right, exactly. And that's usually good. We often have them on the air. I don't think we're doing it next week, but we often have some of those residents. And it's really a great chance to see what artists from out of town are doing, what they're thinking about, what their process is. And sometimes Santa Fe artists go to the Santa Fe Art Institute, and they really learn from each other. It's a nice community event. And then also on Thursday from 7:30 to 8:30, is this Global Warming Equals Global Warning exhibition. That's, once again, a free event with refreshments.
Well, that's great. You can go there early in the evening and then still catch one of the theater shows we talked about, Anything Goes or
that's right.
Lion in Winter.
Santa Fe Art Institute is at sfai.org, and their number is 424-5050.
You could also run up to Buffalo Thunder Resort and Casino, which I still have never been to, about 15 minutes north of the Santa Fe City on Highway 84-285. To here at 8 o'clock Thursday, Engelbert Humperdinck, one of your favorite singers.
Engelbert Humperdinck, the German composer who composed Hansel and Gretel.
No, it's not Hansel and Gretel. This is the guy that sang, you know, "So I'll sing it asleep after loving."
Oh, it might have been his great-great-great-great-great-grandson or something.
"With a song that I wrote yesterday." No, you're worse with the malapropisms and the historical inaccuracies than I am today. Could be related. I know is the one song from the guy. He's actually the great-great-great-grandson. Fine, I'm happy.
I don't know. That part I made up.
Look it up. Now I got to go do my work because you don't feel like other time I say, "Hey, what does this mean? What does construism mean?" And you come up with an immediate response. But now I got to look up Engelbert.
Construism?
Yeah, something like that. If I say to you, "Tell me about Plato and the era of
Well, I can't look anything up today because the internet is not working here.
You've had
a
lot of internet
company.
Problems later.
It's not my problem. It's not the signal isn't working.
You don't need the internet.
The Bus Tapes, local band appearing this Sunday the 18th at the Cowgirl Hall of Fame at 8 o'clock. It's Case Tanner and all sorts of local musicians. Come by and say hi at the Cowgirl Sunday the 18th.
Sunday the 18th, also the Living Treasure Ceremony, 2 o'clock,
yes.
United Church of Santa Fe, includes Jack Loeffler, folk lorist here in town, folk historian, pardon me, Galen Duke, Amarante Romero, Zinia
Galen
Victor.
And Zinia.
Yep. So 2 o'clock, it's free, I think, 983-5346. Again, 2 o'clock at the United Church of Santa Fe in Arroyo Chamiso. You should also know that there's been a lot of, it's not exactly arts related, but there's been a lot of discussion lately about H1N1 swine flu.
Which we're going to be talking about on Monday.
And because of Monday evening at the George O'Keefe Museum Education Annex, there's going to be discussion, swine flu and you. It's a presentation for teens and teachers. My belief is that it's open to the public.
And everybody can go, yes.
Thank you. No charge, 6 o'clock Monday at the George O'Keefe Museum Education Annex on Grant Avenue. Let me give you a phone number. 946-1007.
And it's part of the Santa Fe Alliance for Science. Now,
that's a good ring to it.
I know.
Alliance for Science.
Yeah.
What else, quickly, rhymes with that?
Viance? Violence? No.
No, Viance. I Viance for your attention?
No. Sunday, October 18th from 7 to 9 at the Rail Yard Performance Center, groundbreaking African dance director-performer from Benin, Lazare Wetin. And we had him on the air the other day, a wonderful West African man who does singing and dancing and drumming, and you can go and dance, you can go and sit quietly, you can participate in any way you want. The Rail Yard Performance Center, for more information, 629-9432.
That's nice. Hey, listen, people like books. The 11th annual celebration of the book is this morning, 10 to noon.
Excellent.
Santa Fe Public Library on the south side on Jaguar Drive, so if you got the morning off, swing on down there. Handmade books by the Santa Fe Book Arts Group, bookmaking demonstrations, and all sorts of books. 982-2846. Again, that's this morning, 10 to noon, at the south side library on Jaguar Drive. You want a phone number, here it comes, 982-2846.
Well, another thing that's happening is there is a benefit for the New Mexico Coalition to End Homelessness, and that is on Sunday at the CCA. They're showing City Lights.
And
Charlie Chaplin.
I wrote a good piece on the background of the movie. It's a terrific, beautiful Charlie Chaplin silent movie from 1931, 2 years after sound films came in, and it's a beautiful picture. I just rewatched it, and you're right, 7:30. See my piece in Paso Tiempo today. I think
you rewatched it. How wonderful! Charlie Chaplin is so amazing.
He really is. He remains the most brilliant to me of all the silent or screen comedy comedians, clowns in general, because he always put a little bit of seriousness, heart. You know, he always touched on political themes, social themes. It was really incredible characterization that's just held over. I think more young people today at least have a sense of who Charlie Chaplin is, whereas they may not know Buster Keaton or Harold Lloyd, who were his contemporaries.
Right, that's
but it's
true.
A great movie, 7:30. I think kids get in for half price, and I believe there's free popcorn.
And even though it's a benefit, it's very reasonable, very inexpensive to get in.
Take the kids.
Treehouse Poetry Reading and Open Mic at 516 Arts, Saturday, October 17th at 8 o'clock with featured poet Jennifer Ponser. You can have the open mic sign-up is at 7:15 in the evening in 516 hours. Oh, that's in Albuquerque. Oh, okay.
I was about to say, what treehouse is this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess
no,
you'd have to branch out and go down to Albuquerque.
I just
this
got this email and I thought, oh, open mic night. That's always nice. Well, anyway, we have listeners in Albuquerque, lots of them. 516 Central Southwest in Albuquerque.
On Sunday from noon to 3 over at the wonderful Santa Fe Children's Museum, 1050 Old Pecos Trail, there's the Santa Fe Animal Shelter's dog adoption event.
Yay.
We like to help out the Santa Fe Animal Shelter.
Oh, my God, they've got some cute dogs. I just looked on the website the other day.
And it's from noon to 3. At the same time, the kids can design, do clay design, 2 to 4. The Children's Museum is a great place to take the kids. It's on 1050 Old Pecos Trail. You can get in a little bit cheaper on Sundays than you can the rest of the day. New Mexico residents get in for a certain amount that's not too expensive. Give them a ring at 989-8359. Today they have a finger painting class at 9 to noon. I'm going to rush over there right after this and do some of that stuff. I like finger painting, especially doing it on the walls.
And tonight at Gig Santa Fe at 1808 2nd Street, John O'Manson is playing at 8 o'clock.
Rob DeWalt wrote a great music column today. It's really good. He talks a little bit about Meow Wolf and the problems they're facing right now that have caused them to stop musical performances. He's a little critical of their attitude of just anything goes, no pun intended. It's a good piece. He also pays homage to the Balkan Middle Eastern Women's Ensemble Rusalki, which is playing at 6 o'clock Friday at the Rail Yard Performance Center. There's a bunch of other groups playing with them, so call 982-8309. But take a look at his column. It's really good. He's a good writer.
He's a very good writer. He is hilarious. He's very funny. Bring him back to this show. Come bring him some one of these days.
Yeah, you want us both here or you want him by yourself?
No, I want both of you.
I know you do. You're that way.
Yeah, whatever. So I got an email from a friend who is making a shout out to people who work downtown. Apparently there have been robberies or burglaries, whatever, at businesses downtown. Someone's going into businesses, and if that person sees a perch, he will snatch the wallet, and if he is seen, he'll say, oh, sorry, I'm in the wrong office. He's going into people's offices. So ladies and gentlemen, put your purses and wallets in a desk drawer. Be aware of strangers. Lock the drawer. Keep your possessions within sight. We don't know who this person is, but I don't think they've been caught yet.
That's a good tip. Something like that happened. I don't know if they're really happy about me publicizing it. At the New Mexican about 8-9 years ago, somebody actually came in and pretended they were dumping out the trash. They were dumping out other things. Oddly enough, you know what? Sometimes I go into grocery stores like Trader Joe's, and women still will leave their purses in the shopping cart and then like wander halfway down the aisle to get syrup or something.
I know. You'd never do that in a big city. There's a very nice security guard here at the in the parking lot outside of the Santa Fe Baking Company who patrols this whole parking lot and says, would you please tell people to lock their cars? Because there are some people who don't even lock their cars, and somebody can just open their door, take whatever is in there, and split.
Yeah, it's true. Just a little more protection. It's not a big deal. Please do it. Did we talk about the historic Canyon Road paint out tomorrow, 10 to 4?
No.
Interactive event with artists painting along the street, artist talks, demonstrations. Mayor Koss will give a little proclamation about historic Canyon Road Day at 10 o'clock. Just head on up there. It's going to be a daily event. It'll be basically a 10 to 4 tomorrow. Just head on up Canyon Road and you'll see artists working. I believe the weather's supposed to be nice. I haven't totally looked at the weather channel lately. But you probably have a beautiful day. But by the way, speaking of nice, beautiful things to do, Galisteo Studio Tour this weekend. Is it already time?
You tell me.
What time is it?
It's 8:58.
Oh, boy, I hear the music in the background.
Yeah.
Galisteo Studio Tour, 10 to 5. Have fun this weekend. Engelbert Hunkelpink, whatever his name is, Thursday night.
And I told people during the KSFR Fun Drive, and we thank all those people who donated to it, and if you haven't, you can still go to ksfr.org and hit pledge. But I told people that if they donated, they could have chocolate chip cookies. What do you see in front of you, Robert Knarr?
I see chocolate chip cookies for me.
And I made them. And they contain no preservatives and no bacon fat. They're just pure chocolate chip cookies.
Is there marijuana in them?
No. Are you kidding me?
You wouldn't say so on the radio,
give me a break. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Robert Knarr, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. Go see Engelbert, your friend, Thursday night.
And lots of good stuff this weekend. And, of course, check the Pasa Tiempo.
Thank you.
And we are streaming on the web at ksfr.org. And my podcast site, which means it's the site where you can go and listen to past shows any time of day or night, is called santafe.radiocafe.org. And it's all free. And my email is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Jazz a la Carta.
Sounds like a good program.
Robert Knott, have a wonderful weekend.
Until see you next week, and then our Halloween special in 2 weeks.
Our Halloween special. Did we already do our anniversary special? Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
We're still around. Not bad.
We're still around after 5 good years.
Yeah, that's nice. And the other 2 years weren't so bad either.
Have a great weekend.
You too,
and everybody be happy.
Bye.
Be peaceful. Wear your seatbelt. Hasta la vista, baby.
Y adios.